Good evening and welcome to City Visions, now in its 20th year on KALW. I'm your host, Joseph Pache. In this hour, we'll be discussing the legacy of Agent Orange and what the Bay Area can do to help. The war in Vietnam ended more than 30 years ago, but the legacy of Agent Orange remains, both here in the United States and in Vietnam. For a 10-year period during the conflict, Agent Orange was used by the U.S. to defoliate jungle areas that had provided both cover and sustenance for opposition forces. Containing a highly toxic chemical known as dioxin, Agent Orange has continued to impact the lives of those exposed more than three decades since spraying stopped. Last year alone, the Veterans Administration paid out nearly $2 billion in disability benefits related to Agent Orange to U.S. veterans. The same cannot be said for those affected in Vietnam, where the Red Cross there estimates that Agent Orange has affected some 3 million Vietnamese, including 150,000 children born with severe birth defects, a number that many worry could only increase unless highly contaminated hotspots in that country are cleaned up. A binational group of concerned public officials and private citizens from the U.S. and Vietnam are calling for $300 million in funding over the next 10 years. They say these funds are needed to clean up and restore the land contaminated with dioxin and to help those who have been suffering its effects. Tonight, we'll talk about the legacy of Agent Orange and the call to fund a definitive strategy to mitigate its effects. Who is ultimately responsible for contributing to this effort? How is the Asian American community here responding to this issue? How is Agent Orange affecting the relationship between the U.S. and Vietnam? And what precedent might this experience set when it comes to addressing the aftermath of war? Joining me in the studio tonight are Day Tran. He's publisher and editor of V Times, a Vietnamese language newspaper in Silicon Valley, and one of the first Vietnamese writers working in mainstream journalism in the U.S. Tran was a staff writer at the San Jose Mercury News and the Los Angeles Times. He was born in Vietnam and came to the U.S. as a refugee in 1975 at the end of the Vietnam War. He studied journalism at San Francisco State University, where he was editor of Prism magazine. Welcome, Day.
Welcome. Thanks for having me.
And we're also joined here in the studio by Kelvin Vung, Program Director at Asian Americans Pacific Islanders in Philanthropy, or AAPIP, a San Francisco-based national membership association of foundations, staff, and trustees of grant-making institutions and representatives of nonprofit organizations. Welcome, Kelvin.
Thanks for having me here.
And by phone from New York, we are joined by Charles Bailey. Through his work with the Ford Foundation, he has focused his time on resolving the lingering problems related to dioxin-contaminated herbicides used during the Vietnam War. Bailey has a PhD in agricultural economics from Cornell University and a master's degree in public policy from Princeton University. Welcome, Mr. Bailey.
Hi, Joseph. I'm very much looking forward to this.
Thanks for joining me. And you, our listeners, can join our conversation in about 20 minutes by calling 415-841-4134. Again, that's 415-841-4134. Or you can email us at feedback@cityvisionsradio.com. So I wanted to start with you, Charles Bailey, with the Ford Foundation. You have been working on this issue for many decades now. Tell us how you got into this work and what continues to drive you to stay in this work.
Well, Joseph, I got into it a long time ago, but I couldn't get very far with it because it was too sensitive. I'm a grant maker with the Ford Foundation, and ironically, I couldn't find anyone who wanted a Ford grant. It took me 7 years to make three grants, but then things got rolling in 2006, and since that time, we've made about $17 million and found a lot of allies, and discovered that this is a humanitarian concern that we can do something about. And because of that, I want to keep pressing forward. We're making progress, but we've really got to resolve this sooner rather than later.
Now, I've mentioned a few things in my introduction about the scope of the issue, but could you detail for us what you understand to be the major issues about the lasting effects of the spraying of Agent Orange in Vietnam during the war?
Sure. No one disputes that large areas were sprayed, or they were sprayed with a collection of herbicides now known as Agent Orange. What is not as well understood is that this is a current problem in Vietnam, not a historical issue of some kind, but it's something that the Vietnamese have been living with since those days and right down to the present. So what does this mean? It means, according to the Vietnam Red Cross, about 3 million Vietnamese who are exposed and have suffered ill health, including about 150,000 children. And among our own veterans, there are large numbers of Americans who served in Vietnam who also are having identical problems. So it's a very much a human impact. In Vietnam, it's made worse by the fact that there are former American air bases that are, some of which are badly contaminated with dioxin. Ironically, cleaning up the dioxin so-called hotspots is the easy part. It has a beginning and an end, and it's very technical, and that's where the two governments are starting. But that's a necessary condition, but the sufficient condition is to address the real human need in both countries.
And tell us a little bit more about that human need.
Well, in Vietnam, the widespread view, backed by some evidence, is that dioxin exposure at some time in the past shortens your life and may lead or has been linked to birth defects in your children and grandchildren. And so Vietnam being a demographically a very young country, the preponderance of people who are affected are children and young adults living with disabilities that are have been linked with dioxin exposure. And so what is needed is programs to improve the delivery of social services so they can live lives of greater comfort and dignity and to participate more fully in their society. These are things that where Americans can help, and indeed many of us are already doing so.
And what kinds of services are you calling for or are necessary? Just paint a picture for us of the impact on people's day-to-day lives from diseases and disabilities related to exposure.
Well, typically, Joseph, a disability, a child born with birth defects, this becomes a extra burden for his family or her family. And what can be done are things like early detection right after birth. Simple tests can predict, or visual inspection and early intervention, sometimes surgical or other measures, because a lot of these things can be corrected if they're caught early. But having the early detection and the specialized medical care is something that is not available to everyone, and particularly in rural areas. And then as children grow, inclusive education, so that they are mainstreaming in the schools and learning along with their differently abled cohort. And as they become enter into young adulthood, opportunities to work together to get jobs and for their parents, community centers where they can keep their kids once a week so the parents have a break too. As I say, this is a real family burden, but it's an opportunity where social services can make a big difference and help people live fuller lives.
Now, are the effects related to those who were originally exposed and their immediate offspring? Are we seeing examples of ongoing exposure because of the ongoing contamination that sort of is sort of regenerating the cycle of exposure and disability?
Well, both. But by far the larger part of the problem is the people who were exposed at some time in the past, particularly during the 1960s, during these extensive spraying campaigns. And as you say, their descendants, their children and their grandchildren. But there are a number of what are called dioxin hotspots, that is, areas where the Agent Orange was stored and handled and got into the ground at former American military bases. There are 28 of these that we've been able to identify, of which three are particularly in need of urgent attention. And the in three different locations, Da Nang, Bien Hoa, and Phu Cát, all of them former military bases. And we've begun to make progress here. So these bases are not nearly as much of a threat as they once were, particularly the one at Da Nang. But that's the situation. Just think of it as a contemporary problem. We're beginning to work on it, but a lot more needs to be done.
And that was Charles Bailey with the Ford Foundation joining us by phone from New York. And of course, Charles, will bring you in into the conversation as the hour unfolds. I want to turn next to Day Tran. He's publisher and editor of V Times, a Vietnamese language newspaper in Silicon Valley, and one of the first Vietnamese writers working in mainstream journalism in the U.S. He's worked before with the San Jose Mercury News and the Los Angeles Times. Day, I wanted to ask you to comment on some of the things that Charles Bailey brought up. Specifically, he's talked about what has been widely accepted as the spraying of Agent Orange and what seems to be some evidence that has linked the contamination of the areas in Vietnam and the exposure of those that were in the surrounding areas and those were in the immediate wake of the sprays. He's described some evidence that has supported the links of disease and disability. Are there areas still of dispute around the connections that Charles was making between Agent Orange and the disabilities and the needs that he is outlining for cleanup, restoration, and social service infrastructure development?
Yeah, I think that the U.S. government is still disputing that there's linkage between the dioxin in Agent Orange and birth defects and other illnesses in Vietnam. But in a way, it's kind of like global warming. No one really disputes it, but it's, you know, the scientific evidence is still not clear. I mean, it's still not sort of definitive. But if you go to a certain village, for example, you see the number of people who have birth defects, that you realize that there's got to be some sort of linkage. Or you see the U.S. servicemen who came back and their children have these birth defects. You have to say there's got to be some sort of linkage.
Is there a difference between what the U.S. will acknowledge in terms of disabilities and fallout for U.S. veterans compared to what it will acknowledge maybe effects for people in Vietnam, whether it's the civilian population or perhaps the Vietnamese who are fighting alongside Americans in Vietnam?
Well, the U.S. government or the Veteran Administration here has identified a couple of dozens of illnesses that are related to Agent Orange for U.S. ex-U.S. servicemen where they can get compensation for. But in Vietnam, there's still a dispute between the two governments about what to do in terms of reparation, in terms of, you know, helping the Vietnamese there. They're giving out humanitarian aid, but they don't call it, you know, sort of reparation.
This is the United States you're talking about,
right?
And why do you think they're making that distinction between humanitarian aid and reparations?
I think that is I think they don't want to set a precedent. Mm-hmm. That's just my, you know, my guess. There've been lawsuits that have gotten all the way to the Supreme Court that was filed by the Vietnamese government, and that did not end in favor of the Vietnamese government. So, but I think the important thing though is that what do we do to help? You know, the humanitarian need in Vietnam is so great, and also the cleaning up the environment is so great. And I think that instead of talking about, you know, who's at fault, mm-hmm. we should be concentrating on the means of helping the country and the people there.
Charles Bailey, do you agree with that? Do you think it's important to kind of assign responsibility or perhaps even blame? Or is it more important to just kind of move forward with trying to resolve the issues that you've outlined?
No, I think it's important to move forward. And in fact, the decades in which this was such a sensitive issue that it couldn't be talked about, it's entirely due to this geopolitical and other considerations and struggles over the issues of responsibility. And that's what's kept it from being solved. And we think, and I certainly agree with De Tran, that this is something we can solve and that we should respond to this humanitarian need regardless of cause, because you can spend forever arguing about cause and you still haven't helped anyone. We want to help people. The need is evident. We know how to do it. We're trying to raise additional funds and draw the attention of people of goodwill to this very simple point. It is a humanitarian concern. We are forward-looking about solutions, and we can do this.
Are there still studies, however, going on to try to create a more of a scientific basis for the claims that you and others are making about the connections between Agent Orange and the disabilities, or is that something that's sort of been put to the side at this point?
Well, there have been studies, and there should be more studies, but studies cost a lot of money. And at the end of the day, they don't necessarily help with the evident human need. They may throw more light on the subject, and I certainly think that that's important. But as I say, I think we should cut to the chase, and the chase is to work with the government of Vietnam, who is already investing $50 million a year of its own funds to help some of these people, and basically help strengthen the existing social services, as I mentioned earlier. These are services that directly help families. It helps families to get on their feet and for their children with disabilities to grow up into functional adults in their society.
And just before we open our lines for callers, I wanted to get Calvin Vuong into the conversation. He's a program director at the Asian Americans, Pacific Islanders and Philanthropy, or AAPIP, a San Francisco-based national membership association of foundations, staff, and trustees of grant-making institutions and representatives of nonprofit organizations. Thanks for waiting patiently there. I wanted to now turn this to understanding how the Asian American community, or communities, I should say, here in the Bay Area and perhaps elsewhere across the country, look at this issue and are engaging it and what they see perhaps as their role in being part of a solution.
Sure. I can't speak for all members of the Asian American community. In particular, the program that I run is called Viet Fellows, and it works inside the Vietnamese American community. Seeing as much of the population of the Vietnamese American community came from Vietnam after the war, you know, there's this lasting sort of there's a connection to Vietnam that I think a lot of Vietnamese Americans have. In particular, we are working with younger generations of Vietnamese Americans to ask them to look at the ways in which Vietnam touches their lives and to really look at those issues, in particular around Agent Orange and dioxin. And I feel that. And what we've seen through talking to just so many Vietnamese Americans all over the United States is that they do have an interest in learning about how to help Vietnam and what are those issues. And, you know, to be pretty honest with you about, you know, where people even, you know, what people know about Agent Orange, I would say that not many people actually know about it.
And this is within the Vietnamese American community in terms of like the first generation that was
the generation that have grown up in the U.S. Mm-hmm. You could probably extrapolate that beyond just the Vietnamese American population. Mm-hmm. But looking at, you know, what is taught in school about Agent Orange, you know, it's taught about that it's during the Vietnam War. And I think if you go to a lot of people who even know what Agent Orange is and you ask them, is there an effect today on the environment or on people, that they're not going to know that there is. And it lingering effects. You know, when I first started doing this work, it was something that was brand new to me as well. Mm. And so I think, you know, what we're really trying to do at the beginning is to get that awareness out there and to find ways that we can connect people who are interested in doing this work to solve these problems in Vietnam. How do we connect them to Vietnam to provide those ways?
And that strikes me on some level. Like, perhaps I would wonder, why isn't that conversation going on within the community or within families who may be able to kind of share the historical record with their children and grandchildren? Why do you think, from your experience, is that not happening? And I'd like also, Day, your thoughts on this too, but let's start with you, Kelvin.
Yeah, perhaps Day could go a little bit more on that as well. But I think just because of the reasons why people came to the U.S., that, you know, because of the conflict in Vietnam, it's a very troubling time for many people, and there are a lot of experiences that people don't want to talk about. And I think we're at this turning point inside the Vietnamese American community in particular, where people are starting to talk about it. People are realizing that Vietnam has changed drastically in the past 10 years. You're getting a large generation of younger Vietnamese Americans that are growing up wanting to know what is Vietnam, what is that history, which is, you know, some of the things that we're trying to address with our program. And, you know, we've been doing these talks all over the U.S. to talk to people about what are some of these issues and what are these histories and how do you engage people in these conversations? You know, it's a challenging thing to have people talk about, I think, with anything dealing with war. And we're finally at that point where the community is starting to do that.
And I'm going to let you answer, Day, in just a moment, but I want to reintroduce the program in case you're just joining us. This is City Visions on Local Public Radio, 91.7 KALW San Francisco, and on the web at KALW.org. I'm Joseph Pache, and tonight we're discussing the response to Agent Orange, which are with our guests here, Day Tran, publisher and editor of V Times, a Vietnamese language newspaper in Silicon Valley, Kelvin Vung, Program Director with the Asian American Pacific Islanders in Philanthropy, and by phone from New York, Charles Bailey with the Ford Foundation, who's been focusing his efforts on resolving the issues of ongoing dioxin-contaminated herbicides that are in the land and affecting those in Vietnam, those all from the Vietnam War. I want to invite you, our listeners, to join us with your questions and comments. The number to dial is 415-841-4134. Again, that's 415-841-4134. Or you can email us at feedback@cityvisionsradio.com. If you're a veteran of the Vietnam War and have had experiences with Agent Orange and want to talk about that. If you're a Vietnamese American immigrant and want to talk about your relationship with Vietnam and this particular issue, or if you're someone in the general public that's hearing about this for the first time and has some responses and reactions to our conversation tonight, 415-841-4134. Again, 415-841-4134 or feedback@cityvisionsradio.com. So back to you, Day Tran. How about this issue, about this apparent, I don't know if it's a lack of, an intergenerational or intra-family dialogue around the impact of Agent Orange in Vietnam?
Well, among the older Vietnamese Americans, there's a political concern as well that some of the Vietnamese Americans here think that by helping, they really don't want to have anything to do with Vietnam at all, because they see that as helping the communist government there, and some of them even think that Agent Orange is cooked up thing, is a propaganda propagated by the Vietnamese government, and there's some of the South Vietnamese soldiers, you know, who fought on the American side during the war, are now in the United States, and some of them have come down with symptoms that are, I think, consistent with Agent Orange effect, and yet they're not being helped. And part of it is because there's this political issue that's still prevalent in the Vietnamese community. Last year, we had some stories in Vietnamese, and I was going around, you know, trying to get them published in other Vietnamese publications in around here, and no one would agree to publish them at all.
Do you think there's sort of an issue around, for lack of a better term, sort of biting the hand that feeds you, so to speak. If the Vietnamese that have come over after the war, who found refuge here in the United States, were then to criticize the United States for something they did in their country many years ago, would that be seen as somehow incongruent or disrespectful or sort of something you don't want to be doing given their status in this country, or am I going in the wrong direction?
I think there's a little bit of that, but I think the overriding concern is still having to help the Vietnamese government. I think that's the
people wouldn't
issue.
Be so worried to be seen as critical of the United States as
right.
more as supportive of or endorsing mm-hmm. the communist government in Vietnam.
Right, and also, I mean, calling for more help to Vietnam is not. I don't think it's going to be seen as, you know, being critical to the U.S. government either. Mm. So, I mean, that's not really the reason, I think.
Kelvin, did you want to add something there?
Yeah, I do want to add one thing about that. I think definitely there's that concern about working the Vietnamese government. But I want to just bring it back to, in particular, this issue is that, you know, we're not focused on the politics of it. And it really is focused on, you know, what are those humanitarian needs at the end of the day? You know, this is a question that I get asked a lot, you know, pertaining around like the Vietnamese government. And, you know, at the end of the day, what we're really doing, you know, what Charles Bailey is really trying to do is, you know, how do we help those that have been affected? You know, what are those humanitarian concerns and needs that need to be addressed, and how can we address them?
Mm. And Charles Bailey, to bring you into the conversation, you're a member of the are you a member of the U.S. Vietnam Dialogue Group, or are you just sort of working with that group on this issue?
I'm working with that group. It was set up on a trial basis in January 2007 to see if a citizen-to-citizen dialogue would work. And in fact, it did work because it was the first genuine dialogue, that is, back and forth, between people who had no axe to grind except concern for their fellow human beings. There were five Americans, five Vietnamese, Susan Beresford, the former president of the Ford Foundation, is the convener. And they meet, they discuss, they try to throw a spotlight on the contemporary issue. And last June, they came out with a plan that addresses the needs of environmental remediation as well as addressing the human human impact. This is a plan that would cost $30 million a year over the next 10 years and would substantially, not entirely, but very substantially deal with the contemporary issues. And they have taken this approach of a humanitarian approach. Let's get going. Let's do something. Mm-hmm. Let's not argue more about cause or who did what in the past. The past is past.
Mm-hmm. And we're going to get to elements of the plan in the second half of the show. I want to get at this issue of dialogue, not only between people in Vietnam and the U.S., but specifically between Vietnamese in Vietnam and Vietnamese and Vietnamese Americans here. How crucial do you think this dialogue, this public consciousness raising, is going to be to the success of your call for funding?
Well, I think that Vietnamese Americans have demonstrated time and again their charitable and philanthropic interests in Vietnam. There are $30 million a year flow from Vietnamese Americans in charitable contributions to do all kinds of good things in Vietnam, schools, education, orphanages, and many other great and good things. I think that as people prosper and wish to do more assistance in Vietnam, that realizing that helping out with programs for children and young adults with disabilities is a really fine use of their money. And it brings them into contact with their with Vietnam in a really nice way.
I'm going to stop you there because we need to get to a few callers here. This is City Visions on Local Public Radio 91.7 KALW San Francisco and on the web at KALW.org. I'm Joseph Pache, and tonight we're discussing the response to Agent Orange with our guests here in the studio, Day Tran, publisher and editor of V Times, a Vietnamese language newspaper in Silicon Valley, and Kelvin Vung, program director with the Asian American Pacific Islanders in Philanthropy. And by phone from New York, we're joined by Charles Bailey with the Ford Foundation. 415-841-4134. We still have a couple lines open for you to call. 415-841-4134. You can email us at feedback@cityvisionsradio.com. Let's go first to Karen from Berkeley. Welcome to the program.
Oh, good evening. I'm so glad you're having this, because as we go forward, I think it's commendable for Charles Bailey from the Ford Foundation to want to help the tragic situation in Vietnam that was caused by our bombing of Agent Orange, napalm, all kinds of chemicals, defoliants, herbicides that just devastated the forests and the lands and the water and the complete ecosystem, made a big toxic mess out of it. And what's shameful is that our government is still doesn't believe it, like we don't believe in global warming. That is really, really shameful and ignorant, because we did cause all of the birth defects. I have read extensively about the situation with the deformed children. And as we go forward into the future, we're doing the same thing again, because we are using depleted uranium. We're engaged in low-grade nuclear warfare in Iraq, Afghanistan, Gulf War Syndrome in 1991.
Karen, I appreciate your comments. Do you have some questions related to tonight's topic?
Same thing. We're responsible, and our government should pay.
Okay. Thanks so much, Karen.
That's my comment. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Karen. And let's go next to Anna from Oakland, 415-841-4134, to join our conversation. Anna, welcome to the program.
Thank you. About 5 or 10 years ago, I saw a show on one of the PBS channels, and I think it was Vietnam vets who went back to Vietnam, and they went to examine some of the children, that these youngsters. These children were more than disabled. Like the last lady said, they were deformed. I couldn't look at it. It was just horrific to see children with their hand growing on backwards. I can't even remember. It was quite a while ago. And maybe if your guest could stress the effects of this, it was just horrible. I mean, it's not just somebody can't walk or somebody, that's horrible in and of itself, but these are serious, serious defects. And the people, and they were showing some of the families, trying to have the child and this and that. And they're still living in huts and, rather simple situations. They're not capable of, the only thing they can do is love the child.
So Anna, are you in support of, you haven't heard a lot of the elements of the plan, but are you in support with the general idea of more money to the tune of $300 million over the next 10 years going towards supporting services for these individuals who are affected and cleanup? What's that?
Yes, of course I do.
And would you...
$3 million of their people.
And now the question is, would you contribute to this, or do you think it's something that should come from the U.S. government?
I think it should come from the U.S. government. I don't have any money to contribute. If I was wealthy, I would, but I just don't have it.
But say you did have some money.
I would contribute.
You would contribute. Okay. Thank you so much, Anna, for your call. 415-841-4134 or feedback@cityvisionsradio.com. And I wasn't trying to be difficult there with Anna. I'm going back to this question now. I know Charles and Day and Kelvin, you want to move forward and you want to get away from the blame game because it gets people paralyzed and stalled. And nothing changes, and people continue to suffer. The question that remains, though, as you're asking for support for your plans, or support for the plan that Charles is involved in crafting, how do you, as long as the U.S. government is still playing a side role here, how do you get the general public, and specifically the Vietnamese-American population and other Asian-American communities, to take up some of this burden? How do you sell it, so to speak, to them? As many people would say, wait a minute, this is the U.S. government's fault. The U.S. government should be paying. Why don't we start with you, Day?
Well, I think, you know, obviously this is something that happened more than 35 years ago. So there's, you know, it's part of, it's receding into the memory of a lot of people. And to the new generation, a lot of them don't even know about Agent Orange. But I think it's important. I think it speaks to us as a people, as Americans, and it speaks to what our role is as Americans and also as the U.S. government. I mean, is this, do we just walk away from things that we didn't do correctly? Or is it something that we should take some measure to just do to correct, you know, to bring some, to lessen the, you know, the misery of a war that, you know, has happened 35 years ago.
Right. And Kelvin, again, do you have a sense that there's a sense of responsibility or duty amongst Vietnamese Americans, perhaps the generation you're trying to target, for trying to give, I don't know if give back is the right word, because they're not giving back to something that they, but you know what I'm saying, is to reconnect or reach back to their a homeland that they may or may not consider a homeland. How do you translate that message? How do you get people motivated to give to something that they either have not, don't feel a connection to, or their family has sort of tried to cover those connections because of the things you've already said, because of the pain of going back and thinking through and talking about such horrible experiences that people were exposed to that led to their having to leave their homeland?
Well, that's actually at the core of the Viet Fellows program. You know, we're trying to engage the Vietnamese American public. And, you know, one of the ways we're doing that is by taking Vietnamese Americans back to Vietnam and, you know, giving them that experience in Vietnam to learn about their history, their roots, and also some of the current issues going on in Vietnam and ways that they can be involved in that solution. And when they come back to the U.S., when our fellows come back, they actually travel the U.S. to talk to the different communities. You know, engaging the Vietnamese American population on this subject isn't something that happens overnight. You know, we're not just going to produce some magic video or great presentation and everyone's going to have their minds changed. But it's a process a lot about, you know, as Day was saying, and I think I mentioned earlier, is that people don't really know about Agent Orange. It is an issue that happened a long time ago, but there is still relevance today in the country. And it's doing that educational awareness, teaching people, you know, that there are effects and showing them what those effects are and having people inside the community do that. That's where we're starting to build the base for the future, where we can have people that, you know, when they think about going back to Vietnam, they think about Agent Orange, or they think about populations with disabilities and what ways they can contribute either, you know, through time or money. You know, a lot of people in the U.S., I think a lot of people that I speak to in the Vietnamese American community would like to help, but they don't know the organizations or they don't know how to actually go over there and volunteer.
Are any of your outreach efforts trying to target those who actually immigrated from here as adults, immigrated here from Vietnam as adults? Or are you just looking at the first generation that kind of grew up here?
Well, we want to target the entire Vietnamese American population. One of the ways that we're really trying to do that is to have people have these conversations, you know, to look at that first generation that grew up in the U.S. and have them go to their parents and ask them about Vietnam. You know, how do we start that intergenerational dialogue? Because I think without that awareness raising, without that dialogue, you can't move this issue forward, or rather you can't solve this issue. And I think that's one of the things that we're really trying to work on right now. And, you know, I think it's a general trend when you're looking at solving any issues that you need to raise that awareness first inside whatever community you're trying to do work in.
Hmm. And Charles Bailey, back to you for a moment. In your work with the binational dialogue group on Agent Orange and dioxin, what do you see as some key things that have to happen at this point in order to get people to move away from waiting for the U.S. government to kind of step in and want to take some role in contributing to this effort?
Well, first of all, I would like to suggest and point out that there are already different actors contributing to this. For example, UNICEF has started a program for children with disabilities in Vietnam. The United Nations Development Program is working with the government on cleanup of some of the hotspots. Governments of other countries have contributed to various projects and programs helping young people with disabilities. And there are a lot of people from our country, including Vietnamese Americans and others, who are already contributing to similar programs through a whole array of American NGOs that are working in Vietnam. So it's not like we're starting from scratch. And then there's the U.S. government, which has slowly been appropriating money beginning in 2007, but increasing slowly. Mostly to focus on cleanup of the contaminated airports, but also for programs, funds channeled through American NGOs that bring an array of social services and direct assistance to families. And so there's already a lot going on. And I would say from my own direct experience of it that it's high quality, high value for dollars invested, and there's certainly more to be done. And people can contribute according to their ability, and they can also talk to their friends, and they can talk to their representatives in the federal government to increase the contributions of the U.S. in tandem with these private sources.
Day Tran, I wanted to ask you this question. You keep mentioning how, you know, the memory of Agent Orange, of immigration, of the war might be fading in the minds of the public and perhaps those who experienced it or came to this country because of it. Why now? Why is this, after so many years, why is this the time where there's a groundswell of support? What are perhaps the contributing factors that are allowing this issue maybe to take root in a way that it hasn't all these years?
Well, I think part of it is to raise awareness, through the work of the Ford Foundation, Charles Bailey and others. But also I think that After the war, there was just too much heat, and then you need time to cool down. You need the two governments to start sitting down to have normalizations, to set up trade and other things before something like this can be brought to the table and discussed freely. And I think that's part of the reason.
And Charles, do you agree with that? That it was just too painful to talk about until now, and now people are finally ready. Perhaps the younger generation, like Kelvin, is reaching out to, are finally able to hear this.
I think there are a variety of factors. Some are those you just mentioned, changes in this country, but also changes in our relationship to Vietnam. It's only been 15 years since we established diplomatic relations. But during that time, Vietnam has become the number one source for American companies' direct investment in a whole variety of manufacturing and service industries. And this has been a factor in building their wealth. Until next year, I think Vietnam will become a middle-income country, according to the UN classification. The U.S. is also the number one destination for Vietnamese exports. So there are a lot of economic interests. There are increasing security interests having to do with Southeast Asia and which are of interest to both governments. Mm. Increasing tourism and trade and a greater sense that the 21st century is going to be the century of Vietnamese opportunity in advance, whereas the 20th century was one of war and destruction.
So you're saying perhaps now, as Vietnamese is seen as a more lucrative trading partner and perhaps a security ally in the region, that perhaps this is bringing up interest again in the area. And the question here is not necessarily the means or the motivations, but the ends that are important, I think, is what you're getting at. I'm curious how issues or people's concerns about the United States involvement in Iraq and Afghanistan, and more recently here at home, concerns about the Gulf oil spill and BP's role in that, how awareness and dialogue about those issues may be sort of shedding light on this issue that has been forgotten for so long. I wonder if there's a link there. And Charles, and then Day.
Well, certainly when I talk to people, they often make this link typically to the war in Iraq. And then they generalize it to all wars. And the fact is, Joseph, that all wars, all modern wars, have a very long footprint to the future. That they, the wars don't really end when the guns fall silent and the last soldier leaves the battlefield. They go on. And here is a prime example of this in Vietnam. And we have an opportunity here to change this history, to end this legacy, and we can do it with a reasonable amount of time and resources.
And Dave, did you want to add anything to that?
Well, I think as with the oil spill in the Gulf or global warming, I think there's an increased awareness and about the environment and that goes for Vietnam as well. I think the younger generation in Vietnam is becoming more environmentally conscious as well. Mm-hmm. And I think that brings up, this brings forward some of the issues from Agent Orange.
Mm-hmm. And Kelvin, in your messages and your outreach to the youth, the Vietnamese-American youth, are you also trying to kind of politicize the group, so to speak, to kind of make some of these links and say, we, as a growing voice in this country, that this is a chance for us to have a political voice through awareness and consciousness raising, and then contributions, whether financial or in other ways, to the political process. Now, technically, you're a nonprofit charitable organization, but how do you perhaps use some of these threads to kind of to light the fire under the people you're trying to reach?
Yeah, just to reiterate, we are apolitical in our messaging, but I think one of the things we do look at is how to increase civic participation. How do you get people to start thinking about these issues? And I think that's a lot of what we're trying to do when we go out and we talk to the community is, we ask them about what are their interests, what are their values, and how do their values, their interests, their sort of identity, and as they're searching for their identity, what are those ways that social justice causes play into it, or what are the ways that for those that are Vietnamese American, how do the issues in Vietnam play into their lives and what they want to do with their life and how they want to give back? So we talk to them definitely about those. We don't take any particular political stance on that, though.
415-841-4134 or feedback@cityvisionsradio.com to join our conversation tonight here on 91.7 KLW, local public radio in San Francisco. I'm Joseph Pache, and we have guests here discussing Agent Orange, Day Tran from the V Times, Kelvin Vong from the Asian American Pacific Islanders in Philanthropy, and Charles Bailey with the Ford Foundation joining us by phone from New York. 415-841-4134 or feedback@cityvisionsradio.com. I want to go to an email, and then we'll get to Surah in just a moment. And this is an email from Art in San Francisco, and it says, "We, in parentheses, American taxpayers, should help. Agent Orange damage to Vietnam is something our government did in our name because of the corruption of our government by corporate money, and the corruption continues, unfortunately. See the contracts that benefited corporations in Iraq. So we have an obligation to do what we can to repair the damage we did. And we should follow that up by ending the corruption that causes so much damage by the U.S. military-industrial complex around the world." That was from Art in San Francisco. And now let's go to Sarah from Fremont, who's been waiting patiently. Welcome to the program.
Hi. I'm citizen of Fremont, and I work in San Francisco, and I have lots of co-workers who are from Vietnam. However, I was listening to one radio program which had to do with food production, and there was some information that there's lots of growth in businesses creating vegetable produce and exporting them to different parts of the world, particularly in America. And I was wondering if there has been some verification that the farmlands that are being used have been sterilized or have been cleaned up from the dioxin, and what methods of verification, and what does the scientific community say about the reality of land being rid of that product? When I first heard the news about the produce as a business, I thought that was just fantastic. And now that I'm listening to the program tonight, I have second thoughts that I know how toxic that can be. Most people are not even aware that the side effects, whether it's skin rash or nausea or GI upset or things of this nature or even possibly...
Okay, Sarah, I'm going to have to cut you off there. I'm sorry, so I can let Charles Bailey answer your question. Thanks so much for your call. Charles, did you want to briefly address Sarah's concern there?
Yes, indeed. Well, the good news, Sarah, is that dioxin is not water-soluble. It only attaches to soil particles, so it doesn't move very far in the environment from where it is deposited. There is no scientific evidence that it is taken up in vegetables or plants. The danger to people is simply local around a small number of hotspots, some of which are already being cleaned up. And the danger is that they might eat fish or ducks that had picked up some of the contaminated sediments from the bottoms of ponds near one of the hotspots. I want to emphasize it's a very local phenomenon. Vietnam Public Health Association has been working to advise people in the communes around these ponds to be careful about their food and their food handling, and they brought this kind of fish production to an end. So this should not be a worry.
And staying with you, Charles, in the last several moments of our program, I had a couple of things I wanted to talk about. One of the things that struck me in preparing for the program tonight is how not only is this about cleaning up the toxic waste and restoring the ecological soundness and in the areas that were affected, but as you mentioned, building an infrastructure for helping those who are affected. There's a lot of discussion in what you said tonight and other places that I've read that in some ways we're also trying to create an awareness of the rights of the disabled in Vietnam, perhaps where one doesn't exist or where one doesn't exist the way we think of disability rights. And I'm curious about that sort of almost exportation of our brand of disability rights and infrastructure to another country. Is that a very deliberate part of this plan?
Well, fortuitously, the Vietnamese have been working for several years on a new national law on disability, which passed the National Assembly last year and is now being implemented. And it's very much a focus on the rights of people with disabilities, not only for things we now take for granted, like public access, but a whole variety of ways in which people can get out of their homes and get engaged with society, and they can speak out. So there's a new law that's being implemented, but of course, together with that, you need people who will, in fact, speak out. And there are a number of what are called disabled people's organizations around the country. I know of one in particular in Ho Chi Minh City that is helping build public speaking and advocacy, thinking about strategically about advocacy, so that the new law can, in fact, have some meaning in the lives of many people, some of whom cannot very well speak on their behalf, but others who can and are speaking out.
And to stay with you yet for one more question, how much of the $300 million has been raised so far? Because I believe the plan was announced almost a year ago at this point. Is that right?
That's right. Well, we're still calculating this, but the U.S. government has appropriated $15 million last year and $18.5 million this fiscal year. The Ford and other foundations have put in several more million dollars, and I'm still trying to figure out ways to track what the various UN agencies are doing. So we're making some progress, but if you take the $30 million target, our general notion is that about half of this would come from the U.S. government. So far, so good on that side. But where to really make this tick over, we need to have a broader participation. And that's why we've been talking, and thank you for those questions about the Vietnamese American community. They're absolutely critical to this, not only for the money they're already donating in cash and kind, but also for their leadership among other Americans, to say to our leaders and other Americans, this is an issue that we care about. This is a country that we should be concerned about. And this specifically is a humanitarian concern we can do something about.
And then, right, that goes right to you, Kelvin. So how do you take Charles's call there back to the Viet fellows and the communities that they're going to talk to? How do you take this and grow it at this point?
So that's... As I was stating before, you know, we're focused right now on building that awareness inside that community and sponsoring some of those conversations inside the community so that they can happen, so that we can, you know, have people who are interested in talking about it. And I think as more and more people talk about it, as more and more people think about ways they can give back to Vietnam, that this becomes one of those issues that people do want to be involved with.
And are you able to track or see how your efforts are turning into donations?
Well, we're still working on raising more money inside the community. And right now, our focus is really building the awareness. And I think as we go forward with this next year, that this is something that we're really looking to see, you know, how can we track those numbers? Right now, there's not a way for us to track those numbers. But it is something we hope to be able to kind of spur inside the Vietnamese American community. And in addition to numbers, you know, for helping out with this plan, though, you know, we do place people in Vietnam to help the organizations provide more social services and to develop new programs to do work in Vietnam.
And how can people who are listening tonight learn more about your programs in case they want to get involved?
Yeah, they can definitely look us up online at vietfellows.org. And then just a general place for information, though, for people who want to make Agent Orange history, they can go to makeagentorangehistory.org.
And we'll make sure to have links to those websites on our website, cityvisionsradio.com. And I'm leaving the last question to you, Day Tran. As someone who emigrated from Vietnam in 1975, what message do you want to leave, not only to the general listening public, but perhaps people like you who came here as they think about this issue and their connection to it?
Well, I think first of all, for the Vietnamese Americans, I think that it's I think that by virtue of being this country, we're a pleasant group, and I think we do have some small measure of obligation to give something back, you know, to the less fortunate in Vietnam. Not only because it's the right thing to do, but I think it's I think it would help heal our wounds, our psychic wounds, pretty much. As for the larger community, I think that we, as Americans, I think we do have an obligation to do the right things. It doesn't have to be a big step. It doesn't have to be a huge amount, but any little contribution would help. Because I think it just, I think it brings us, you know, make us a better people as a whole.
So start small and grow and
right.
And basically appeal to people's sense of obligation and duty. And that's City Visions for this evening. Our guests tonight were Day Tran, publisher and editor of V Times, a Vietnamese language newspaper in Silicon Valley, Kelvin Vung, a program director at the Asian American Pacific Islanders in Philanthropy, a San Francisco-based national membership organization of foundations, staff, and trustees of grant-making institutions and representatives of nonprofit organizations. And by phone from New York, we were joined by Charles Bailey from the Ford Foundation. Thank you to all for joining me this evening.
Thank you.
And for a link to this and other City Vision shows, to let us know what you thought about tonight's program, to subscribe to alerts and download podcasts, check out our website at cityvisionsradio.com. Our engineer this evening was Kevin Vance. Tonight's show was produced by Yumi Wilson. Our senior producer is Judith Sansone, and Neil Freese manages our website. Join my co-host Lauren Meltzer next Monday as we take a look at how the results of the 2010 census may affect Alameda County over the next decade. This is Joseph Pache. Thanks for listening. Good night and have a great week.